Shri Antadreep, Maya Pur, Samantadreep, Godadreep, Madhadreep, Koladreep, Ritadreep, Janadreep, Modadrumadreep, Brutadreep, Abhinga, Srinavadreep, Dharmaki Jai. Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gop, Gopigo, Govardhan, Dwadasavanamika, Shri Braj Mandala, Dharmaki Jai. Dada Subhavana Ki Jai, Shri Sham Kundarada Kunda Tulsi Bhakti, Jamana Ganga Devi Ki Jai. Jagannath Paladev, Subhadra Sudarshan, Prabhu Ki Jai. Bhakta Pravarta Shri Prahlad Maharaj Ki Jai. Bhakti Vigyam Vinasana Kodi Shina Shringa Bhagavan Ki Jai. Charo Dham Charo Sampradaya Charo Chari Ki Jai. Akura Mat Raj Shri Chaitanya Mat Ki Jai. Ora Nanya Sakamat Samuha Ki Jai. Shri Harinam Sankirtan Ki Jai. Samagata Bhakti Vrinda Ki Jai. Goa Premanandi Hari Hari Bho. Om Ajnanam Timirandasya Jnananjana Salakaya Chaksuron Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Nama Gurave Gaurachandraya Radhikayai Twadalaye Krishnaya Krishna Bhaktaya Tadavaktaya Namo Nama Yang pravrajanta manupetam apeta krityam Dvaipayano viraka taruva juhava Putreti tanmayataya taravo benedus Tang sarvabhuta hridayam munimanatosmi Bhaktya vainaya parada lakshe chiptastya kamarita ranga marye kripa maitvam sharanam prapadyam brinde namaste charanaravindam tvaivasmi tvaivasmi Najivami tam bina iti vigyaya radhe tam nayamam charanantike. First, I offer my unlimited obeisances in the dust of the lotus feet of my most worshipable Diksha Gurudev. Nichalila Pravishta Om Vishnupad Astotara Satashri Srimad Shula Bhakti Vedanta Swami Prabhupada. And the same unlimited obeisances in the dust of the lotus feet of my most worshipable Shiksha Gurudev. Om Vishnupad Astotara Satashri Srimad Srila Bhakti Vedanta Narayan Goswami Maharaj. To all of our disciplic succession and all the assembled devotees. So I'm very happy to see you all again, and some for the first time. The discussion of this evening is based on a request that I received at the airport when I first arrived here. The devotees asked to hear about devotee relationships or general exchanges of one person to another. So that will be the discussion. And actually this topic is requested by devotees all over the world because it's of great importance to all of us. So we'll divide this into a few different sections. One section is how to respond to my understanding or misunderstanding about how I'm being treated by others. Then the next section is how to treat others. I guess those are the basic two. Okay. So this will, these sections will take many, many subsection forms in terms of narrations from the histories of Srimad Bhagavatam, other scriptures, and things that I've heard from Srila Gurudev and Srila Prabhupada in their classes as well. So when Srila Gurudev first arrived in Mawilambar a couple of years ago, he said in his arrival address, there are three verses that you should always remember and keep in your heart. One is, Trinadapi sunichena tirodapi sahishnuna amanina manadena kirtaniya sadahari. That is, one should be more humble than a blade of grass, more tolerant than a tree, devoid of all sense of false prestige, and ready to offer all respects to others. In other words, offering all respects to others without desiring any return from them. In such a humble state of mind, one can chant the holy name of the Lord constantly. These are the four prerequisites for being able to chant the holy name with quality and with quantity. In that regard, Srila Gurudev told one story about a king. I always get entangled there. A king who was on tour with his ministers, and he was sitting and resting underneath a mango tree. So at that time, some young boys began throwing rocks at the mango tree, desiring that the rock would hit the mangoes and the mangoes would fall, and then we'll be able to eat the mangoes. So by accident, one of the rocks hit the eye of the king, and the king's eye began gushing blood, and naturally he became blind in that eye. So his ministers told him, O king, please order us that we will immediately kill those boys, or at least torture them for what they've done to you. So the king replied, Why? Am I less than this tree? I see the boys are throwing rocks at the trees, and the tree is reciprocating by offering sweet mangoes. So am I less than the tree? No, I'm a king. So you should give these boys a portion of my kingdom. So that's an example of Trinadapi Sunichena. Well, the whole verse, actually. Then, so that's one verse Gurudev said to always keep in the heart. Then the second one, Dukeshvanu Bigyamana Sukeshu Vigitas Priha Pitaraga Baya Krodha Stita Dirmuniruchate. One who is actually a sage is undisturbed by the threefold miseries. He's not saddened when the threefold miseries arise. Miseries caused by the body or by the mind or by other living entities or by material nature. And he's not elated when there's happiness. He's free from attachment, fear, and anger. This is called a sage of steady mind. And then the third verse, to always keep in the heart, Tatenukampam sushumikshamanam punjana evadmakritang vipakam ridvagvapurbir hridadanamaste jiveti jo muktipade sadayabhak. This same verse, Srila Gurudev made the subject of an entire class a few years before that in France. While he was beginning this class, he noticed that devotees were doing little things like making garlands or not paying complete 100% full attention. So he said, "You can do these things anytime. I'm only here for 5 or so days, and most of the days are gone. So I want your full attention. Keep your eyes wide open, and your ears wide open, and your mouth wide open." So the first two were obvious, why? But we didn't know why we were supposed to keep our mouth wide open. So then Gurudev explained that when the wife of Srila Vyasadeva was listening to her husband recite the Srimad Bhagavatam, she had her mouth wide open. And so the bird, Sukha, Krishna's personal bird, who was told by Radha and Krishna just when they were leaving this world to go back to their own abode, that you stay here and preach Krishna consciousness. So this bird was flying away from Lord Shiva, and he, to take shelter, he flew into the mouth of the wife of Vyasadev. So why did Gurudev give that instance? Because Sukadeva Goswami is the embodiment of transcendental knowledge. And Sukadeva Goswami is that same Sukha parrot. So Gurudev said, if you keep everything wide open and pay full attention to me as I'm speaking this verse, then all transcendental knowledge will fly in your mouth. So he's explaining this verse, Tatenu Kampam Shushu Mikshamanam, that you should su sumikshamanam. He said, what does this mean? Su means very good. You should consider in a very good way that when suffering comes to me, is it caused by somebody else? No, it's not caused by anybody else. It's caused by my own past activities, and it's also caused by Krishna's mercy. So what should I do in return? I should enthusiastically offer my obeisances with my body and my mind and my words. And in this way, by seeing all circumstances in this way, then I'll become a rightful heir to the kingdom of God. So in that, to understand this verse better, he told the history of Bhishma, who was lying on the bed of arrows, and the Pandavas all came to offer their respects. So he was telling them transcendental knowledge, how don't think, because they were lamenting that it's all our fault that all these millions of men died on the battle. And the grief was so great that they couldn't go on in life. So Bhishma was teaching the philosophy of life. And as he was doing that, Draupadi was smiling, covering her mouth with her veil. Gurudev explained that in the Vedic culture, ladies and girls don't just blurt out laughing, but they smile in a very chaste way. So Draupadi was doing that, and Bhishma asked, why are you smiling? So she said, well, I'm hearing all this transcendental knowledge from you now, but where was your transcendental knowledge when Dusasana and Duryodhana were trying to derobe me? So he said, well, at that time, I'd become just like a demon, because I was associating with demons, and I was dependent on demons and living in the house of demons. But now, the blood that was made by that food that I ate from them, now it all drained out because of these arrows. So now I can think clearly. So now I'm going to tell you, Bhishma Dev is telling them, so now I'm going to tell you a history. There was a very beautiful widow, also self-realized, and she had a son, a little son, and she used to earn her living by begging alms, and she used to occupy her day by worshiping her deity. So one early morning, she sent her little boy out to the forest nearby to pick flowers for the worship. So as he was in the bushes picking flowers, a big snake, black snake, came and bit him. And immediately the boy turned blue and died. So it just so happened that a hunter was passing by as this happened. So he immediately went into the bush, and he knew the art of mantra chanting to attract the snake. So he said his mantras and the snake went into his basket, and he covered up the basket and put it under his arm, and he put the boy over his shoulder, and he went to the boy's mother. And as soon as the boy's mother saw him, she immediately began wailing in grief. And then when she was a little bit abated in her tears, the hunter began to tell her the story, and then said, "Mother, please give me permission. Please order me to chop this snake in half and kill him." So she said, "Well, if you do that, will it bring back my boy?" And he said, "Well, of course not." She said, "Then don't bother to do it." And he said, "But if I don't kill him, then maybe he'll bite some other people." So she said, "No, don't do it." So then the hunter thought, "I don't really care what she says. I'm going to kill the snake anyway." So he was just about to behead the snake when all of a sudden the snake started talking. And the snake said, "Don't blame me. It's not my fault that the boy died. I've been living in this bush for years, and I haven't bit anybody before. It was time. The cause is time. The time came. Kal personified. He came and ordered me to bite this boy." So then, all of a sudden, Kal personified time appeared on the scene. And he said, "It's not me, and it's not the snake either. But the time came that the boy's sinful activities, the result of his sinful activities, fructified just at that moment. Because in his previous life, both these boys were friends, and the boy who was bitten by the snake killed the other boy. And now the other boy came back as a snake, just at the time that his sinful reaction fructified, and he was destined to die." So the moral here is that Tatenu Kampam Shushu Mikshamanam, we should very carefully consider, what is the cause of all circumstances surrounding my life? So these are the three verses that Srila Gurudev said to memorize and keep in the heart. Then he said in Mawilambar, in that arrival address, "Don't think," and then he started naming a couple of devotees from Mawilambar, "Don't think so-and-so and so-and-so are the cause of my suffering." Then he pointed at his own chest and he said, "You are the cause of your own suffering." So this is how to respond. There was Prabhupada, now something from Prabhupada in that regard. In one village in India, there was a beggar who went to the home of a rich man to beg alms. And when the rich man opened the door, he beat with a shoe the beggar. So the people who witnessed this were in shock. The beggar didn't do anything. Why all of a sudden would this man of the house beat him? So there was an astrologer in the village, and he said that it's because in this beggar's last life, he was the father of the rich man, and he used to beat the rich man. So now he came back to be beaten by the rich man. Now, we all know the glory of Srivas Thakur. Srivas Thakur is an associate of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he used to have nocturnal kirtan, all-night kirtan, with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his associates. And the envious non-devotees weren't allowed to come. So one envious non-devotee named Gopala Chapala thought, "I'll take revenge. I'll put some paraphernalia of Durga worship on his doorstep, so that everybody will think that when nobody's looking, he worships Durga, and thus everyone will defame him." So he did just that. He put some wine and some particular kind of red flowers, And in the morning, Srivast Thakur opened his door and saw all the paraphernalia there. And then he made a big announcement. Look, everybody, see what I do when nobody is looking. And then all of a sudden, there was a cry from the villagers, and they said, outraged, who has done this to Haridas Thakur? Let us find the culprit. So he didn't at all try to defend himself, protect himself. He just knew that Krishna's in everyone's heart, and how Krishna wants everybody to think for my benefit, that's how everybody will think. In the meantime, what happened? He didn't have any thought of revenge, but Krishna had his own plans, and he gave that Gopala Chapala leprosy. And leprosy means that the sores start eating away your whole body, and your nose falls off, and your fingers fall off, and all the insects start making their houses in all the sores, and it's excruciatingly painful. So he came to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and begged him to relieve him from the suffering. And Mahaprabhu said, no, actually, you should suffer for millions of births because you offended my devotee. And later he said, if you want to be relieved, then you'll have to go take shelter of my devotee and beg forgiveness, which Srivast Thakur immediately gave. Another similar instance, with some variety of taste, is Maharaj Ambarish. You all know the history of Maharaj Ambarish, who, in order to observe Ekadasi, took some Charanamrita before feeding his guest, the great powerful sage Durvasa Muni. So Durvasa Muni couldn't tolerate this, and so he was extremely angry, and he pulled out some hairs from his head, some dreadlock from his head, and threw it on the floor, and a big demoness named Kritva came out and immediately started running after Ambarish Maharaj to kill him. So neither did Ambarish try to protect himself, nor did he try to retaliate, because he could have called all of his ministers and he was the powerful emperor of the world. But rather, he was just so absorbed in thinking about Krishna and Krishna Lila, and tears were coming from his eyes from that absorption, that he didn't even worry about what was coming towards him. But Krishna thought about it, and Krishna immediately sent his Sudarshan Chakra to kill Durvasa Muni. So the Sudarshan Chakra went after him, and you know the Sudarshan Chakra is so powerful that it can destroy the whole universe. So it was pursuing Durvasa Muni, and in the hills, in the valleys and the oceans, and then it chased him all the way to the Vaikuntha planet within this material world. And he begged Lord Narayan to save him. And Lord Narayan says, no, I can't do that, because I know no one but my devotees, and my devotees know no one but me. So I consider, and I am in the hearts of my devotees, and they're in my hearts. So I consider that your attempt to kill him is an attempt to kill me, because I'm in his heart, and I have no independent existence outside of being in the heart of my devotee. So you should go back and beg him for forgiveness and ask him to save you, which he did. So it just so happened, so he was being chased by the Sudarshan Chakra for a whole year. And during that year, Maharaj Ambarish fasted. He didn't eat anything. Why? Because he was, number one, lamenting and regretting that it's all because of me. It was my fault that this poor Brahmana has to suffer like this at the hand of the Sudarshan Chakra. And secondly, he was praying, absorbed in praying to the Sudarshan Chakra to release Durvasa Muni from that pursuance. And then finally, he said, if I have done any pious activities at all, then please use those pious activities to be cool, don't burn the sage. So simultaneously, just at that time, the sage ran back to earth and to the lotus feet of Maharaj Ambarish and begged for forgiveness. And in Prabhupada's words, he said that Maharaj Ambarish said immediately, "Oh yes, at once, take all the results of my pious activities and immediately be delivered." You may be wondering, just as a side note, how is it that in the beginning of the story, he was so concerned about breaking a codicil at the right exact moment, and because the pot and time was dwindling down to nothing. And according to the scriptures, if you don't break the Ekadasi fast at the right time, within a certain time, then you don't get the benefit of the Ekadasi rut. So, but yet he fasted the whole year. So Gurudev explained that he took a little Charanamrita every time after Ekadasi and then resumed his fast. So that's what he did throughout the year. So what was the result of Maharaj Ambarish's liberality and non-blaming mood? The result was that Durvasa Muni was awestruck by the Vaishnavata of Maharaj Ambarish, and he realized his glories, and he himself became a Vaishnava under his guidance. Of course, we know that Durvasa Muni is already a pure devotee, but he relishes taking the parts of the bad guy in order to glorify his devotees, the Lord's devotees. Okay, another example of a personality who takes the activities of others, which would ordinarily cause him suffering, who takes it in a right way and thus doesn't experience suffering, is the Avanti Brahmana named Dattatreya. Srila Gurudev, this is from the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, and Gurudev told this narration in Badger. For 2 years, actually, he was telling this narration. That is, Maharaj Yadu was on tour, and he found this sage naked and just roaming about very carefree and happy. And he was inspired in his heart to ask the sage, "How come you're so happy?" And the sage said that, "Because I have 24 gurus and I learn very nicely from these 24 gurus." He explained that one guru was the mountains, the mountain caves and the mountains which hold many trees. And then the trees are very tolerant. Whatever anybody does, somebody may come to chop down the trees, a woodcutter, but still the tree is always giving its fruits and leaves and shade and flowers. And then he said that the air is also my guru. Why? Because the air goes everywhere, penetrates everything, but still the air never mixes with anything. So wherever one goes, I learned, he should be detached and not be affected by anything. So there were 24 gurus. Very interesting stories he told. So then Gurudev explained that this sage, Dattatreya, he went back to his native village when he took the renounced order, and he was begging alms, and he had a begging bowl. So the people knew him from before, so they would call him all kinds of names and call him a bogus sannyasi. Sometimes they would grab his begging bowl and fill it with urine and stool. Sometimes they would urinate directly on him or on his head. Sometimes they would throw dust on him, dirt on him. But he didn't care at all. He was very happy. So Gurudev said, "I want all my sannyasis and all my preachers to be like this." especially the senior ones. Even if somebody passes stool on your head, you should be happy and not retaliate, knowing that it's everything is Krishna's mercy. Now, what to do, he said in those lectures in Badger, what to do if there is a person that I feel, or many persons that I feel, that are abusing me, even if they cheat, Gurudev said, even if they cheat me, I shouldn't be upset, I should be happy. And so what to do with that person, or persons, who abuse me and criticize me from my point of view? Because everything is our point of view. There's no reality, really, except for Krishna and the spiritual world. And even there, everything depends on mood. That is, Krishna may have done nothing, and yet in Radharani's mood, he's an offender, so she doesn't talk to him. There's two kinds of man, ahoitaki, sahetu, and ahetu, with cause and without cause. So even there, what is the reality? It's all based on mood. And here, everything is pervertedly reflected moods. So if, by my consideration, somebody or many people have gathered together for a conspiracy or whatever the case may be, whoever I feel is abusing me and criticizing me, I should build a hut in my house and invite that person to live there. And that way I can remain always humble. I once asked Gurudev about 12 years ago, when I was just first learning these bhajans that you sang so beautifully tonight. And I said, Gurudev, it seems that, you know, I spend half my day criticizing others, and I spend the other half of my day worrying that other people are criticizing me. So what can I do to get out of it? So Gurudev said, you should follow Srila Raghunath Das Goswami and Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who are always absorbed in these songs. He said, you shouldn't have time to think of any of those thoughts because you should be so absorbed in these bhajans. And what are the bhajans? They're the prayers out of it. Just like you were singing Bhaja Hare Mana Srinanda Nandana so nicely, that I'm always associating with wicked persons. I don't just to get some sense gratification and some favors for them, and I avoid the association of saintly persons, and I'm so attached in a material way to my family members, thinking that they can save me. And what else? I'm always absorbing my mind in the disturbance of heat and cold and winters and summers and blasting heats. So my mind is always in the wrong place. So, oh, son of Nanda, whose lotus feet are the shelter of all fearlessness, please give me a shelter at your lotus feet so that I can be engaged in these nine processes of devotional service instead of being engaged in sense gratification because I'm totally helpless to get out of it myself. So that was Gurudev's response. Once I remember I was... At that time, I was living in the Rup Sanatan Gaudiya Mutt in Vrindavan. And it was Mangal Artik, and then after Mangal Artik, when we were circumambulating the deities and singing Jaya Radhe, Jaya Krishna, Jaya Vrindavan. And then we came to the line, Jaya Yasoda, Srinanda Yasoda Jaya, Jaya Gopagan. Sri Nanda Yasoda Jaya Jaya Gopagan. And I was thinking of a problem that I have. But then in the middle of the line, I was thinking, well, what's the use of thinking of the problem and trying to figure out how to solve my problem myself because I already have the way out of the problem at this very moment just by singing this song because I'm singing Jaya Nanda Jaya Yasoda. Jaya Gopagan. What does Jai mean? Of course, we know from so many years that Jai means victory. But that's a little bit impersonal just to know that much. I mean, okay, you be victorious where you are, and I'll be where I am, and you have your life, and I'll have my life, and you should just be victorious, or all victory to you, or hail to you. But Srila Gurudev explained a very deep meaning of the word Jai, that many of you here are Indians, so you know that wherever there's Jai, there's also Harjai, Parajai. Parajai means, right, defeat? Defeated. So one country or team is the conqueror, and one country or team is the defeated country. And you know from the news or whatever that when one country takes over another country, it loots it, it steals from it, and it completely controls all the people. They all have to surrender to that victorious country. So Gurudev said, I'm praying, whoever was saying Jai to, Sri Nanda Yasoda Jaya, or Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Gurudev, Srila Haridas Namacharya, Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai, were actually praying, a pleading, and grievously pleading, that the enemy is here. The enemy is my lust, anger, greed, pride, illusion, and envy. They're on one side, and you are on the other side. So please conquer over them and defeat them and make them fully surrender to you to do whatever you say. Take me over. Prabhupada said once, everybody is looking, in one of his Bhagavad Gita lectures, everybody is looking, okay, who's my friend here? And who is my enemy? But he said, there's only one friend and one enemy, and it happens to be the same person, and that is the mind. As Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, the mind is the best friend of the conditioned soul and its greatest enemy as well. For the mind that's controlled, the mind is the best of friends, and for one who fails to control the very mind is the greatest enemy. So another very good example of a person who responded in a very exemplary way. This narration is from Chaitanya Bhagavat, and that is the narration of Srila Haridas Thakur. He was very determined that although he was born in a Muslim family, he was very determined in his devotional service to Krishna and chanting Hare Krishna. So the Muslim magistrate told him, if you don't stop chanting Hare Krishna and stop preaching from these ridiculous demoniac Hindu scriptures, if you want to preach, it's okay, but preach from your own scriptures, from the Muslim scriptures. So Haridas Thakur said, I can't do that. I can't give up my devotion to Krishna. So then the Muslim magistrate threatened him that if you don't stop, then we're going to beat you in 22 marketplaces. So Srila Haridas Thakur said, you can cut me into thousands of pieces if you like, but I'll never give up the chanting of Hare Krishna. So then the magistrate and the Nawab ordered their sentries to beat him, and they dragged him through the streets, even though many respectable citizens of the town were begging the sentries to stop, because they were thinking this is outrageous torture to such a pious person. And if they continue, then our whole village will be destroyed. So some of the rich men, they were offering, falling at the feet of the sentries and saying, if you just stop beating him, I'll give you any amount of money. Please stop. But the sentries were absorbed in their hatred of the pure devotees, so they kept beating him. And his skin was coming off, his muscles were coming off, his blood was running out, and he was just like a bunch of broken bones and some blood. So now we've come to 22 marketplaces, and the whole time he was smiling and chanting Hare Krishna, and he didn't feel the pain at all. So finally, at the end of the 22 marketplaces, the sentry said that, and he was smiling at the sentries also. And the sentry said, if you don't die, then the Nawab and the magistrate will kill us and our children. So Haridas Thakur said, well, I don't want to give you any trouble. And he gave them a big smile. And then he went deep into trance and stopped his breathing. So they very happily thought that he was dead. And then they brought him to the magistrate. And they said, well, we've killed him, so now you can bury him. So the magistrate said, because Gurudev said the Muslims, they have everything backwards. So they said, well, we can't bury him, because if we bury him, then he'll be purified of all of his sins and get salvation. So just throw him in the Ganges, and then he'll suffer eternally in hell. So they threw him in the Ganges, but then he came out the other side, very beautiful and young, as though he didn't get any beating. And it happened that he passed by the magistrate, and the magistrate saw him in that. Oh, I forgot to mention that the magistrate said, before the beating began, he said, if he remains alive by the end of these 22 marketplaces, then I'll know that he's a saintly person. But he was being very sarcastic. So now the magistrate saw him in his beautiful, effulgent, golden form. And Haridas Thakur, what did he do to the magistrate who was the cause of all of his beating? He smiled at him. And then the magistrate surrendered and fell down at his feet and begged forgiveness. So these are some of the... Oh, one other very good example is Lord Vishnu himself. The sages, like Bhrigu Muni and others, and the heavenly planets, they were trying to decide. They were having an istogosti and trying to decide amongst themselves who is the absolute truth. Is it Brahma? Is it Vishnu? Is it Shiva? So they nominated Bhrigu Muni to go and make the experiment and find out. So first he went to Lord Brahma and he offended him in his mind. And Brahma became very, very angry. And then he went to Lord Shiva and offended him with his words. And Lord Shiva was extremely angry and was going to kill him. But his consort, Parvati, who's the embodiment of the three modes of material nature, tried to encourage the mode of goodness in him. So she helped him control that anger. And then he went to Vishnu and he decided, well, this time I'm going to commit an offense with my whole body. So Lord Vishnu was lying on the couch of Shesh, and his legs were being massaged by the goddess of fortune. And he went there and he stomped on his chest with his foot. So then Lord Vishnu got up and said, oh, please excuse me, O gentle Brahmana. Your feet are so soft and my chest is so hard. I hope it didn't give you any pain. So he's the best example. I remember one time around 1968, when Srila Prabhupada came to Boston, I was telling him that, you know, there's this devotee in the temple that I can't get along with. And I started explaining why I couldn't get along with this devotee because of his faults. And then as I was talking to Prabhupada, just by Prabhupada's very presence, my mood started changing. Although he didn't say anything, he was listening. But in front of him, my mood started changing, and then I said, well, should I just forget about it? So Prabhupada said, yes, you have to forgive and forget, otherwise how can you live? So not only forgive, but forget. All right, so that was the first section. And the second section is that was how to take when I have a conception that the world is coming to me in an abusive way. So now the second section is how to convince myself not to be abusive to others. Abusive means angry or critical. However, the critical may not be abusive in the sense of if I'm criticizing somebody who really deserves to be criticized, for example, somebody who criticizes my Gurudev, and somebody who makes mass propaganda. Everywhere my Gurudev goes in the world, these people make mass propaganda. They call up everybody in the city and they say, if you go to Narayan Maharaj's programs, you'll go to hell. Prabhupada will reject you. And go to hell and you get kicked out of our institution. So somebody like that really does deserve to be criticized. Yet, there's a problem, and it's not even an offense if I criticize them. Yet, there's a big problem with that. So, in all cases, whether the person is a devotee or a non-devotee or somebody who's so wretched because he's making systematic propaganda to keep the world away from sadhu sangha. So, in all cases, what do I tell my mind to protect myself? Why is it a protection of myself if I don't criticize someone who deserves to be criticized because he's criticizing my Gurudev, even in a very large way, like around the world? And the problem with criticizing is that we make a link to whoever we're thinking about by a bridge. We make a bridge called the bridge of consciousness. And whoever I'm criticizing, whether the person has the fault or doesn't have the fault, it really doesn't make any difference. But if I'm criticizing and thinking of faults, I'm thinking somebody has a fault, so I'm thinking of the fault, then by the bridge of consciousness, that fault comes to me. And then I'll end up criticizing my Gurudev. In fact, Srila Gurudev there was one excerpt from a lecture. In other words, part of a lecture he devoted to this very subject in Holland a few years ago. He said, if somebody's criticizing bhakti or Bhagavan or the bhakta, then you can defeat the points, but don't criticize the person. Because if you get so absorbed in criticizing, then later on you'll criticize your godbrothers and godsisters. You know, first you're criticizing the sahajiyas or the anybody who's saying your Gurudev is a sahajiya, and then you're saying all bad things about those people, and then soon you'll be criticizing your godbrothers and godsisters, then soon you'll be criticizing your Gurudev, and then soon you'll be criticizing Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and then soon you'll be criticizing Radha and Krishna. And the reason he told all that is because one of his disciples had left, who was very active on the internet in defeating the arguments of those who were against Gurudev, like the Radhakund Babaji's and others. But he made the mistake of criticizing the person and not just the points. And I remember hearing a very rare tape because there were some tapes that didn't get all around to the Bhaktivedanta tape ministry, at least at that time, maybe since then it did, which Prabhupada, from Prabhupada's speaking, very soon before his departure from our vision in the world. And he said that if somebody has a bogus philosophy and he's cheating people, if you criticize him as a person, then it's like getting too close to a porcupine. Number one, you could get stung by those points that come out of him. And number two, you'll be overwhelmed by the very bad smell that's coming out of him. So you'll be affected in so many bad ways. Rather, if somebody says, oh, Have you heard of what's that one's name that was in the 60s and 70s? Maharajji, Guru Maharajji. And then I would say, I'm Prabhupada speaking. Then I would say, no, I don't know about him. What's his philosophy? And then you say what his philosophy is, and then I would defeat his philosophy. But of course, a pure devotee can even criticize the person. As Prabhupada said about that same Guru Maharajji, I kick on his face with boot. But if we imitate, then we have to suffer from that bridge of consciousness hazard. As you know, because most of you have been initiated by Srila Gurudev, at the initiation ceremony, he says to always keep this finger out of the bead bag, because this is the anger finger. You didn't follow what I said? Don't you realize who I am? I'm going to break your leg. Gurudev, I've heard him say that about 5-6 times at initiations. So he said, so we keep that anger finger out of the bead bag in order to remind us to keep anger out of our chanting. Suppose I'm angry and I'm right. I'm absolutely right about what I'm saying. Even so, and I may think that I was angry for a good cause, and yet the people couldn't understand that I was angry for a good cause. Still, it's my duty, because the people won't understand, because you see that little baby there? What's your name? Jayashree, right. The little baby in Jayashree's arms can't really understand anything. If you start being angry at the baby won't say, yes, you're absolutely right. But rather the baby will cry, thinking, oh, this person doesn't like me. So no matter how old we are, we're really, at least I can say for myself, I'm just like Jayashree's baby in terms of sensitivity and also ignorance, due to my bodily conception of life. So if somebody gets angry at me, I can just, it doesn't even matter why, I just feel the anger, and then I think the person doesn't like me, and then I don't want to be around them anymore. And then I start being angry at them. It's just human, and it's not Krishna consciousness, but it's human bodily conception of life consciousness, which I don't know about anybody else, but I'm in. So in psychology, we learn that if we become angry, then it's not that we make the person understand, but we lose the person's ability to understand. I take airplanes about maybe every week or so. I take an airplane, and I'll have to hear the same announcement, you know, every week from the lady in the airplane. So every week she's giving a big smile, you know, the one they show the movie with the people making the announcement, and with a very big smile and a soft, sweet voice, she says, and if you do tamper with the equipment and smoke, there is a $10,000 fine. So it's very easy to take. So there are a couple of stories that Gurudev told about regarding criticizing and this bridge of consciousness. One took the form of a drama, meaning a play. In Kent, England, about 5 or 6 years ago, the devotees put on a drama of the Brahmana leaving home to do bhajan in the forest. And even though his wife was weeping, he was determined, I'm going to be a renunciate and I'm going to do bhajan. So he was sitting in the forest and chanting Hare Krishna. But then, as ill luck would have it, there happened to be a brothel not too far away. And he would see the prostitute and the prostitute's associates passing by, going to the brothel and going back to their homes. So the devotee who was playing the part of the Brahmana. She was chanting there in the play, and she's going, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare. So he kept chanting and getting older and older. And meanwhile, you know, because the years passed by, and the prostitute, as she passed by the Brahmana, she thought, oh, what a saintly Brahmana, and she would offer her respect and think, I'm such a sinful person, I lead such a wretched life, I wish I could be like this pure Brahmana. So he was thinking the way he was thinking, and she was thinking the way she was thinking. And then the years passed by, and then at the end of their lives, the Yamadutas came to the Brahmana, and the Vishnudutas came to the prostitute. And he was complaining, why did you come to me? You should go to the prostitute. And the Yamaduta said, no, you made a bridge of her qualities that came into you by your bridge of consciousness. And she was taken by the Vishnudutas because she had become so saintly by her repentance. And another similar story Gurudev told on his first world tour. He was in England. And he told the story of the two brothers, the younger brother and the older brother. The older brother moved into the temple and the younger brother didn't. But as ill luck would have it, there was a brothel right across the street from the temple. So the older brother kept looking out of the window in complete disgust with comments about mental comments about the prostitute and her associates. So then the years passed, and the younger brother, he was thinking, oh, my older brother is so fortunate that he gets to live at a temple. So anyway, the years passed, and they came to the end of the life, and the Yamadutas came for the older brother, and the older brother said, you've got the wrong address. You should go across the street to the brothel. So the Yamaduta said, no, we've got the right address because you made a bridge to her qualities. And the Vishnudutas came to get the younger brother. So I asked Gurudev, I can understand, to a certain extent at least, why the older brother had to go to hell because of his consciousness. But if the younger brother is thinking of the older brother, who went to hell, how come he went to Vaikuntha? So Gurudev said he was only thinking of his brother so far as his appreciation went, that he's so fortunate to live in a temple, he's chanting Harinam, he has Vaishnava Sangha, and so I should do that too. And he took Vaishnava Sangha and became a saintly devotee. So the two of them got that result. So that's the great danger of criticizing. And not only criticizing, but you know, meditating on the thing. There were two brothers, two friends, and they were going to cross the river. So there was one lady who couldn't get across the river. So one of the friends carried her across the river, and then on the other side of the river, he put her down, and they kept walking. So a couple of hours later, his friend said to him, because they were devotees, his friend said to him, I can't believe that you carried that woman, that you had the nerve to do that. You're supposed to be a saintly person. So his friend said, I only carried her for a couple of minutes, but you carried her for a couple of hours. And there was another couple of friends, and they were by the river. And one friend was saw that a scorpion was like flapping and drowning in the water in the river. So he picked up the scorpion to bring it back on the land. But that scorpion bit him and jumped off back into the river. And he kept picking him up and he kept biting him and jumping off. So his friend said to him, well, how can you keep doing that? So the one who picked up the scorpion said, well, the scorpion's like my guru. He's teaching me a very good thing. He's teaching me not to give up one's nature. In other words, even though I'm trying to help him, because he has the nature of a scorpion, he keeps biting me. So I should learn that even though he keeps biting me, I should maintain my nature as a saintly person and not retaliate. I think you all know the history of Srila Rupa Goswami, who was chanting in his deep bhajan, and he was so deeply absorbed in his bhajan that he had forgotten all the external surroundings, and he was in his mood of Rupa Manjari. And in that mood, he was watching Radharani and the Sakis joking and laughing with each other. So as Rupa Manjari, he also started laughing, and that laughter came out in his sadhak form as Rupa Goswami. So just at that moment when he was laughing, one lame Vaishnava came to him to offer his obeisances. And then Rupa Goswami was laughing, so the lame person thought that he was laughing at him because he was lame. So he got insulted and left. And he went to Srila Sanatana Goswami to complain. So in the meantime, Srila Rupa Goswami's meditation broke. And try as he might, he couldn't he couldn't get his meditation back to joke with the Sakis anymore. So he was thinking, I must have offended somebody. Otherwise, there wouldn't be an impediment to my bhajan. So he went to Srila Sanatana Goswami, and Srila Sanatana Goswami told him that, why don't you hold a feast, a big feast, Bhandara, and just invite everybody. And whoever doesn't come, then you'll know that he was the offended one. So this person didn't come. But when this person went to complain to Srila Sanatana Goswami, Srila Sanatana Goswami explained to him that Srila Rupa Goswami was not laughing at him, but he was in deep samadhi. So then he felt so bad, he ran to Srila Rupa Goswami to apologize. And meanwhile, Srila Rupa Goswami was running to him to apologize, even though there was no need for Srila Rupa Goswami to apologize. This is the nature of saintly persons, that even if the thing is not his fault, he thinks that it's his fault. So, of course, Srila Rupa Goswami's meditation could never have been broken, but just to teach us, he went through this pastime of having his meditation be broken. I remember once when Srila Gurudev was starting his world preaching touring in 1996, 1997, and then certain personalities were, as I said, they were making systematic propaganda that people shouldn't go and see Gurudev. So Gurudev was speaking about them in his class, and he was saying, whatever you do, don't criticize. Offer your obeisances to them from a distance. He didn't really mean offer your obeisances. Like, if I'm offering my obeisances from a distance and I'm thinking, yeah, terrible guy. But what offering obeisances from a distance means is, it means don't think about the person at all. And I once asked Sri Padmadav Maharaj if Gurudev had said anything that when I start to criticize people who are very offensive to my Gurudev, but I know that it's not good for me to do that, it hurts my own Krishna consciousness, what should I do? And he said that Gurudev said to pray the Manashiksha prayers. And he particularly quoted verse 5, that, O mind, the dacoits of lust, anger, greed, pride, illusion, and envy are assail one on the path of materialistic life. They are they have bound me around the neck with the torturous, licentious ropes of wicked deeds So, all mind, please call out to the commanders and chiefs of the army, of Krishna's army, like Swarup Damodar and Rupa Goswami and Sanatan Goswami. And then when Gurudev was speaking about the same verse, he said, call out to them, come on, come on, save me, save me, and they will save you. And I remember I was complaining to Gurudev on one of his early world tours, that I don't want to criticize these people who criticize you because of the bridge of consciousness thing, but I can't help it. Just like a waves of a river, it just comes out because I'm so disturbed. So he said, don't worry, I'll clean in there. I'll sweep. Broom. I'll broom in there. I'll broom in your heart. So about a week or two later, I went to him, and it was a little better, but it wasn't fully better. And I said, it's still happening, Gurudev. He said, don't you see me brooming in there? I'm brooming. Oh, very, very important instruction given in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. When King Parikit was touring his kingdom to make sure everything is going all right, because that's the Kshatriya's duty, he saw a bull who was standing only on one leg because his other legs were beaten and he couldn't stand on them any longer. So he asked the bull, who has beat you like this? And the bull could easily have said it was Kali, the personality of Kali, who's a Sudra, who took the form of a king, and he beat me. But instead, he said, this is Krishna's mercy, what happened to me. Krishna is the cause of all causes. So Parikit Maharaj told the bull in response, he said, oh, you who are in the form of a bull, you are fully aware of the principles of religion, which state that the destination that is meant for the perpetrator of irreligious activities, very poetic, the destination that's meant for the perpetrator of irreligious activities is the same destination that is waiting for the person who identifies the perpetrator. So that's a pretty scary thing. Of course, this doesn't mean that I shouldn't try and help people. But it depends on my mood. And it depends on if I'm going to keep thinking of that person's fault. If I tell somebody something with affection, especially if they ask me, and I tell them, and then I keep thinking of their fault, then it'll come to me. And if I immediately drop it, and I think just that I have the fault, then I'm saved. Once, Tamal Krishna Maharaj, who used to come and see Gurudev, asked him a question. He said, you say that we shouldn't criticize others, but as one of the managers of a big institution, sometimes we have to discriminate and criticize for the protection of the institution and to help the person also. So Gurudev said, if you're not careful about criticizing, then your heart will become so hard that you won't be able to distinguish what is an offense and what is not an offense. He said, if you have preeti or love like Mother Yasoda, then you can criticize and chastise, just like Mother Yasoda criticized Krishna. And then Gurudev imitated her and he said, oh, so you've stolen the butter and yogurt. Shall I beat you? So Gurudev was answering like that. Let's see if there's anything more here. Oh, Gurudev also said, just very simply, he said, you're not authorized to criticize. To help affectionately, of course, And sometimes we may not even see. We may think something is wrong and it may be right. I may think something is right and it may be wrong. So I can inquire and carefully understand a situation. In fact, one time when Gurudev was in Brazil, he said, "If you devotees don't get along, then I'm not coming back." He gave the big weapon. So I wanted to read something from the story of Prahlad Maharaj, because recently it was the Nrisimha Chaturdasi. And after, it was the first time that Hiranyakashipu picked up Prahlad, put him on his lap, smelled his head, embraced him, and said, "What's the best thing you learned today?" And Prahlad said, "Oh, best of the demons, the best thing I learned," not today, he said, "What's the best thing you learned in school?" He said, "Oh, best of the demons, the best thing that I learned in school is that one who identifies with this body is certainly always embarrassed by anxiety, and he should leave his materialistic life and go to the forest, namely Vrindavan, and take shelter there of the Supreme Personality of Godhead." So his father burst out laughing and said, "Oh, my child, you've certainly been influenced by the words of the enemy." And he called for the teachers, Sunda and Amarka, and he told them to strictly speak to Prahlad and make sure he doesn't get influenced anymore. So the teachers were asking him, "Oh, best of your family, how has your intelligence been polluted by the mind of the enemy? Please tell us." So how did Prahlad Maharaj reply? He said, "Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whose external illusory energy has created the conception of my friend and my enemy by deluding the intelligence of men. Indeed, I've heard about it. I heard there was such a conception as distinction between friends and enemies, but now I'm actually seeing it, and I'm astonished that it actually exists. I thought it was like some fairy tale, but now I see that it exists, although previously I'd only heard about it from authoritative sources." So, you know how sometimes when you're reading a purport and then you skip a line, so you read one line and then you unconsciously skip the next line and then you read the third line? And then you're wondering, well, that didn't make sense. And then you go back and you realize that you skipped a line. So I was reading out loud a couple of Nrisimha Chaturdasis ago when I was in Miami. I was reading out loud to the devotees. And Prabhupada writes in his purport, "As servant of the Supreme Lord, all living entities are one. But a Vaishnava, because of his natural humility, addresses every other living entity as Prabhu." And I thought, I definitely skipped a line, because it should have been, he sees all devotees as Prabhu. And sure enough, in the next line, not the next line, but two lines down, it said that he accepts all of the devotees of the Lord as Prabhus or Master. But I had not skipped a line in the first place. It really was a Vaishnava, because of his natural humility, addresses every other living entity as Prabhu. That means even the creepers and the trees and the insects, because he sees them all as being controlled by Krishna and being servants of Krishna, either knowingly or unknowingly. And then Prabhupada made a specific thing of accepting all devotees as Prabhus. And then on the next page, or a couple of pages later, he talks about Vaikuntha thinking. And I was particularly attracted here to this purport because Prabhupada, I remembered many, many years ago in the early 70s, when Prabhupada was writing many letters to the devotees about this Vaikuntha thinking. He said, everyone should be friendly for the service of the Lord. Everyone should praise another's service to the Lord and not be proud of his own service. This is the way of Vaishnava thinking. There may be rivalries or apparent competition between servants in performing service. But in the Vaikuntha planets, the service of another service is appreciated and not condemned. This is Vaikuntha competition because there's no question of enmity between servants. So that was a very sweet thing from Prahlad Maharaj. And then one last section called how to avoid criticism and how to act towards others. Srila Gurudev gave a very nice lecture in Odessa, Russia in 2002. And in that lecture, he was talking about Trinadapi Sunichena. And he said, usually we read or hear that he's saying, or Prabhupada said, first love Krishna, and then when you love Krishna, automatically you love all living entities. But this time he didn't say it like that. He said, you should give your love to Krishna, but also at the same time, while you're trying to love Krishna, give your love to other living entities in the mood of Trinadapi Sunichena. And preach everywhere. This is for my householders and sannyasis, all preachers. He said, don't try and manipulate anybody, and don't try to get money from anybody. If you simply try to give love to others, because love has nothing to take and everything to give, then automatically people will want to serve Krishna, and you'll find that money is showering from the sky more than you know what to do with. So that was the first time I had ever heard that, you know, even now he used that word, give your love to others, even though we don't have any. But he wanted us to, like, try. Okay, I'll ask if there's any questions or comments.
Well, a question, in the conditioned state that I'm in, I'm on a sadhak level, a conditioned state, how do I practice that? Gurudev says through Trinadapi Sunichena, then does that become like sadhan in a way?
A practice, you mean?
Yeah.
Sadhan
in life, I mean, especially in household life where you've got a lot of different engagements, say, a lot of different things you're having to deal with. A lot of different energies that are coming at you.
I think you might have given the answer by saying that it's like a sadhan, and in real sadhan bhakti, the definition of sadhan is the engagement of the body, mind, words, the senses, in the nine processes of devotional service for the exclusive purpose of developing bhava-bhakti, which is dormant in the heart. So the potentiality of bhava-bhakti is sadhan. It has the express aim. So if I'm thinking that the purpose is to have good relationships with others, I'll never be able to do it. because that's not the purpose of life. The purpose of life is to relate with Krishna. But the sadhan, one of the rules and regulations, you might say, or part of the process, is to relate to all others properly. So keeping in mind what the goal is, then it becomes so much easier to relate to others in these aforementioned ways. Does that answer the question, sort of? Because I want that. Like, if I'm really after a goal, I'll do anything to get there. Like, for example, take a very big fat lady, and she wants to attract and ultimately marry a very beautiful, slender young man. So that's her aim. So she doesn't mind going on a starvation diet for 40 days, even if everybody around her is eating cake and ice cream, because she has her goal in mind. So if the goal in mind is that I want to please my Gurudev, and I want an intimate relationship, Gurudev said that we should want such an intimate relationship with our Gurudev that he doesn't think, this is my disciple, but rather the Guru thinks, this is my heart. And that happens when one is in Raganuga Bhakti and his heart is one with Guru's heart. So having the goal, and then ultimately I want to be a maidservant of Srimati Radhika. So I have to follow all these things. So remembering all these points, and then I can pull myself back when my mind wants to do something that will hurt me and hurt another simultaneously. Is that kind of answer it? So it's not that I have to force myself to associate if my mind's going to be critical. Gurudev said, okay, don't associate, but don't criticize. And if you have to do anything, then if you have to say anything, then say something, as they say, my mother always taught me, say something nice. Like that. So, and then if I say something nice, it's much easier to free myself and so that I can think of Krishna than if I say something critical. Then I'll never be able to think of Krishna. But if I say something nice, then I get the bonus prize and then I can forget the person and think of Krishna. Do you know what I mean? Does that help make your question formulated?
Sure. The truth never changes.
Just like we don't, like as you said, okay, you're a householder. So maybe householders have to go to work. Work means associating with non-devotees. So don't associate. That is, just pretend to associate. Like Prabhupada said, if somebody is not your swajatiya, then you say, oh yes sir, what you say, that is all right. So that's his exact words and as he's dictating the Bhagavatam. But then devotees, you'll be more revealing your heart to. So going through the motions of associating, but really not associating, but at the same time, not criticizing, because then their qualities will come to me. Any other question or comment?
Mm-hmm. Shamaradevi, my question is about the duty as of a devotee or a person who's witnessing or is a bystander to criticism. So, for example, the people that saw Haridas Thakur being beaten, they beg for that person to stop beating Haridas Thakur. Or if someone's criticizing a devotee, I guess you have answered that to a degree, but if someone's criticizing a devotee as a bystander or witness, what's your duty?
Well, what is my goal? Is my goal to get back at the person who's criticizing? Is my goal to help the person? Is my goal to make sure that my consciousness remains peaceful so that I can continue with my chanting and reading and remembering? So depending on what my goal is, that's what I'm going to do. So, for example, if my goal is that I want to be Krishna conscious and I want the person who's criticizing to not criticize, then it depends also on my relationship with him or her. If I think that they'll be receptive to me, then I can say, It really so much depends on the relationship. Because I would say something to one person that I wouldn't say to another. So I might say that if I had the person's trust, then I might say that whatever you're thinking, then it'll come to, you know, all these things that we discussed, it'll come to us. Or you're transcendental, you can criticize, but because I'm a conditioned soul, I can't even hear the criticism, because then I'll think about it and then I will get those qualities. So you might ask them not to do it in front of you, which means you're telling them that they shouldn't do it in a kind of nice, indirect way. But it so much depends on the relationship with the person who's criticizing. Or I might just, if I'm starting to criticize the person who's criticizing, and it's really not necessary that I get involved, I might just say that Krishna's showing me what I'm like when I criticize. Whatever I do, the answer is, whatever I do, it should be to help my Krishna consciousness out in the quickest way. Now, I don't know if that answers the question.
So if someone came into this room and started beating Jayadev, what should I do? should I let them criticize Jayadev?
Did you say beating or criticizing?
Criticizing and beating Jayadev. For example, just as a hypothetical.
Well, if they were beating him, I would certainly get the strong men to stop it. And if they were criticizing, I'd have to figure out some very artful way to endear. I mean, you try different ways, but I would try to endear the criticizer by saying something that might bring him to attention without making him more upset than he is. Can I help? Is there anything that I can do? And then find out what the problem is and then help him with all these points. There's so many points here that if I can review them again and again in my mind, I can see how to apply like that. I don't know if that was helpful, though.
Thank you.
If you're thinking of an instance, does it help with that instance?
Yes.
Okay. Or you might deflect the whole thing and say, it was my fault that that happened, and you figure out how it was your fault that that happened. And then say something from here to somehow help them in a positive way. And then don't think about them later, what they did. Because then you might end up criticizing Jayadev if you keep dwelling on it. Is that all right? Any other? Yeah.
What is the
payoff?
Get out of it?
Is there a pleasure in criticizing?
There's a momentary pleasure in it, in that you feel like you vented your... Yeah, well, one thing that we think is a pleasure is that it makes us look better without coming up to a high point. If I'm criticizing somebody else and bringing them down, then I come up without really any endeavor in comparison to them. So it makes me look good or better from my own point of view. Prabhupada said we should be like the bees looking for honey and not the flies looking for sores. So that's a payoff, is that it makes me look good and it makes me look like very intelligent, that I know how to judge people. But actually, until I'm on the level of Majjhima, I'm really not qualified to judge others. And Majjhima is very high. It's like Ruchi or something like that, at which time I wouldn't even be interested in hurting anybody.
So would you say criticism is a symptom of pride?
It could be. As a matter of fact, another way to help somebody is to tell them that they have the good qualities. If you're finding faults in them, then tell them they have the opposite, the good quality. And then they'll see how you're encouraging, and they'll see the fault in themselves. If I say it's my fault, then you'll probably say it's your fault. And if I say it's your fault, you'll probably say, or at least think, that it's my fault. Does that answer your question? But the real payoff, not as a payoff, but the real result of criticism is that you get those qualities. I've seen it in myself so many times when I was criticizing somebody for something that it came to me very quickly.
For me personally, I feel like if I'm experiencing some problem from someone doing activities and I feel like a build-up coming, that I'm getting annoyed with them, and I feel like I need to vent it out, and it comes out in the form of, obviously, criticism. How can you steer yourself away from feeling like this build-up that you need to let it out? How can you?
Is the person a friend?
A friend or anyone. Could be anyone.
Well, it depends on, again, it depends on relationship. Say if the person's a friend, let's start with that. If the person's a friend and you're saying you feel that they're criticizing you and it builds up,
doing activity that bothers you, either, you know?
You could say, can I reveal my mind to you? That my mind is telling me that this activity towards me or this activity that I see is disturbing me for such and such a reason, but I'd like to hear from you so that I can understand it better. Again, I don't know the instance, so whatever you're thinking about, does that help? If it's somebody that's not your friend, you might not even need to think about it. Well, can you give an instance? You mean another devotee, but not a close acquaintance?
Say, for example, someone that you work with and they're doing activity, but they're doing things that you don't like or don't appreciate, and you start to not criticize to them, like to their face or talk to them, but you talk about them to other people and say how much they're bothering you or how much they're annoying you. And obviously that's not the right way to go about it, but how do you...
A good way to go about that might be to, if it's a material bunch of material people doing material things, then I would just think life goes on materially and I don't have anything to do with it. If it's not somebody that I can help or should help, or because I'm not knowing the instance that you mean. But, I forgot, it left my mind. What was the thing that you said again? Because I was thinking of an answer, but then I forgot.
When a person is doing activity that bothers you.
Oh yeah, instead of telling somebody, then a good thing is to find somebody to tell who's Krishna conscious and say, this is the particular thing, how should I think about it in such a way that I can be Krishna conscious and tell me if there's a point in my trying to change the situation or not. And tell me how I should think about it so that it doesn't distract me from my Krishna consciousness. Go to that person and tell. Not just a person who can help you, or because he'll just say, yeah, I know what you mean. And here's some more to think about. Does that help? And if anybody else has any answers, feel free. if anybody has a question and somebody else has an answer, feel free.
Yeah.
Prabhupada says in Bhagavatam that we can utilize our anger just like Hanuman utilized his anger to burn down Lanka. But according to what you've been saying tonight, we obviously we're not on the level of Hanuman, but we learn by the great devotees, take their example, but we don't do that. We don't take the example of Hanuman like that, isn't it?
Yeah, that's a very good question. Everybody follow that? Prabhupada said, yeah.
Like Bhaktivinoda Thakur says in the Sharanagati, I'll vent my anger on those opposed to Bhagavan and his devotees.
Right, so how to reconcile all that? If we're like Hanuman and we can't get any material reaction for being angry, then we can be like Hanuman. Plus, I can be angry. Whatever anger I have now is mixed with my own karma. It's not pure anger, like the anger of Mother Yasoda or the anger of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur or the anger of Hanuman. It's not going to be like that. It's going to be mixed. And therefore, there's going to be a mixed reaction. So, I can't be angry in that way of anger, but I should, in a very controlled way, defend the integrity of the Lord or the pure devotee. Like, for example, Gurudev has been asking us over the years to write articles in response to people who write articles against Gurudev. Like there's one link on Pure Bhakti that you see called Unconventional Teachers, because somebody made a movie, so-called glorification of Srila Prabhupada Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And in there, they said some terrible things about Gurudev, indirectly, but obviously about Gurudev. So Gurudev told me to write an article, a very strong article, to defeat all the points. But strong article didn't mean that I start calling the guy all kinds of names and say that he's an offensive demon and doesn't know what he's talking about, but rather, in a polite way, defeat the points. That the movie said this thing, but actually, according to the Srimad Bhagavatam, this verse, it says that. So I can't, because I can't get angry like a pure devotee, my anger will have to be very, I can't be angry. I can't let, with the emotions that are in me are not real. They're mixed with sincerity and lots of bad karma. So I have to control that and respond in a way that is very polite, but yet says the proper siddhanta. Does that answer it? Does that answer yours? I remember one time I was in a van with a few devotees, and somehow the subject got to this person who made the movie. This was years before the movie, and because they were on the internet, they were offending Guru Dev in varieties of ways. So somebody said the name of that person, and then I cracked a joke, and I said, instead of saying the last part of his name, I said the first half of his name, and then put a surah on the second half of his name, because he was being so bad to Gurudev, and I was angry. So then, a few days later, Gurudev hardly ever calls me into his room for anything. But a few days later, he called me into his room, and he said, I heard you said that. Don't ever say that. Don't ever call anybody names or get on the person, but always, and then he repeated what he always said, that only go to the point, don't go to the person. And if I don't say it politely, as I said, even if I'm right about my anger, nobody on the other end appreciates anger, because everybody's like Jayashree's baby, including myself. So if I say it with anger, even if I'm right and I can defeat all their points, it's not going to be appreciated. It means I'm coming down to their level. So I have to remain very polite and sedantic and sweet, but still destroying all of their nonsense. It's an art, like anything else is. Does that make sense?
That's two different statements.
Two different statements.
Yeah, there's the difference.
Anything else? Is anything remaining up in the air? Like but or what ifs?
I have something about karma, so it's not, but you have mentioned karma a couple of times tonight, but it's sort of not in the theme of tonight's wonderful instructions that you've given us, so maybe I'll wait for another night.
Okay. Any last comment or question?
When I have something bad happen to me, is it karma or the mercy of Krishna?
Well, in this verse, Tatenu Kampam, it's stated that it's due to my own past activities. And if there's any obstacle in my bhajan at all, I should think this is due to my past activities. And when Srila Haridas Thakur was being beaten, he was praying to Krishna that don't retaliate to them because they're bound to do what they're doing. So, but that's another thing. That's his position was that how I act will glorify the Lord or Prahlad Maharaj. It wasn't his karma that he was being tortured by his father, but it was for the glorification of the Lord. Because he's glorified and Lord Nrsimhadev is glorified by his actions. Similarly, Draupadi, it wasn't her karma that she was being attempted to be derobed, but it was Krishna's glory and the glory of Krishna's devotee and the glory of surrender. So, but I should think that it is Krishna's mercy because ultimately everything is Krishna's mercy. This whole material world is Krishna's mercy to show me that I shouldn't have made this decision to come here. And at the same time, I deserve much worse, but Krishna gave me it just in a little bit. Like Srila Prabhupada once said, if somebody is chastising me or criticizing me, then I should think, well, why should they be chastising or criticizing me? I'm trying to serve Krishna. Oh, I know, Prabhupada went, oh, I know, I have some impurity, and so Krishna himself is trying to rectify me, or my Gurudev is trying to rectify me. If I say to Vrinda, oh, you red choli, you maroon choli, then obviously I'm foolish. But if then she feels hurt and says she called me a maroon choli, then that's her foolishness. So I should think it's my karma, that it's because I did something to hurt somebody and Krishna's just giving me a little bit back. Like Prabhupada said, if you get your finger cut, then you should think my whole arm should have been lopped off. But because I've taken shelter of a bona fide guru, Krishna is minimizing it. One devotee did some sinful activity, and then the next day he was trying to fix the temple window, big storefront window, because it had cracked or something, and the window fell on him and slit his face. And so we rushed him to the hospital. And then he wrote to, and he got stitches and things. And then he wrote to Prabhupada that, is this my karma that it happened? So Prabhupada wrote back that if a fan is spinning around and you pull out the plug, then it will still keep going around, but less and less and less. And then it stops. and it stops unless you put the plug back in. So it's either a summary punishment of past karma or because I'm doing new karma. But ultimately, it's why is Krishna giving me this as my karmic reaction? Because he wants me to be act right, act in such a way that I won't hurt anybody and I won't hurt myself so that I can practice Krishna consciousness and merge myself in bhajan. Prabhupada also gave the analogy that a rich man did a crime. A rich man's son did a crime. So the father, because, you know, rich men and politicians and movie stars, they're all friends. So the judge is a friend of his father. So the judge says, I have to fine you because you did something wrong. But because you're this, and I could fine you millions of dollars, but because you're the rich man's son, my friend's son, I'll fine you 1 cent. So Prabhupada said, that's how it is if one has taken shelter of a bona fide guru. Then he gets a summary of what he actually deserves. And then when he's fully surrendered, then Karmali Nir Dahati Kintu Chabakti Bhajan. Krishna fully takes away the karma of one who's totally surrendered. It's like, here's my hand facing the light, and so my hand is illuminated. As soon as my hand turns away from the light, it's in darkness. So because I've turned away from Krishna, I have to have all these horrible things. Like in the night, sometimes, and there's no light. And then you may think that, oh, there's some creepy crawly hand crawling up the bed, the things of the bed, or maybe if I open the closet, some monsters might jump out of the closet, or some skeleton might jump out of the closet. So in the darkness, all kinds of frightful, illusory thoughts come. But in the morning, when it's light, then everything is fine. So Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that just as in the daylight, the sun illuminates everything, so when somebody becomes Krishna conscious, his darkness of ignorance is destroyed by the light of transcendental knowledge. Does that answer the question? Okay, so let's see what time. So we'll end here and have arti, right? Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srila Gurudeva ki jai. Prema Nandi Hari Hari Bol. Panchakobha Charubhyascha Kribhya Sindhubhyascha.